Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Now it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the easy bake oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome in Tuesday, May 21st, 2024. It's time for the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, as always, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show, as always, as well. That would be Connor Dunning on X at CW929. Connor, what's the word? How's it going, brother?
Happy Dune Part 2 on Max Day.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to do some watching.
You've got some homework.
Yeah. The Eastern Conference Finals starts tonight, though.
Bah.
We'll be carrying it right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. So there is that. Starting at 7 o'clock.
It's game one.
Yeah, and also, did you see the line jump from 9.5 to 10.5?
I certainly did.
I think when we get to our portion of the show where we talk about the conference finals, I want to talk about the West versus the Pacers in a 7-game series. And we'll go through the top 10 in the West. Who would beat the Pacers in a 7-game series in the, you know, the logjam that was the Western Conference?
Let's do it.
This
is also going to guarantee the Pacers will win the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yes, of course.
Us doing this will be the kiss of death for the Celtics.
The KOD, the kiss of death.
So
gotta love it.
Apologies to Celtics fans out there.
Yes, but we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. That game one of the Eastern Conference Finals with the Pacers visiting the number one seed Celtics, will follow us up right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. I will open here in a moment. I thought the Point Forward podcast with Evan Turner and Andre Iguodala. I know Andre Iguodala isn't the biggest, you know, people in this city aren't the biggest fan of him, but it is what it is from his time with the Warriors and the time that he would not suit up for the Grizzlies until he got traded. He ultimately got traded to the Heat and was nothing while the Grizzlies were doing pretty well. But Penny made an appearance. Penny Hardaway made an appearance on that podcast, and I thought there was a lot in there that was worth discussing. And I thought one of the most interesting things, and we'll talk about it here in a little bit, about 15, 20 minutes, the microfracture conversation that he had about the surgery he had that ultimately hampered his career and ended his career. I thought that was really interesting. In the list of names that had to go through that, damn. It's like, why did it take so long to stop giving athletes this surgery? It's absolutely nuts. But we'll talk about that. He mentioned Ashton Hardaway, why he ended up leaving and letting them go. He also talked about, you know, NIL, and also his NBA coaching dreams, something he says he thinks about every single day. So we'll talk about that, then get to Eastern Conference Finals conversation to end this hour. We have NFL OTA storylines. T. Higgins remains unsigned. He has not signed his franchise tender with the Cincinnati Bengals. What does that mean for him? What does that mean for the Bengals, ultimately, who are still dealing with a Joe Burrow wrist injury that they're very, very worried about? The surgery he went through was not to fix his wrist in its entirety this offseason. It's to try to heal a bone, and they say that bone may not heal for 2 years, especially if he's continuing to use that wrist on his throwing arm. So we're going to have to talk about the Bengals. I'm worried for them. I'm worried for them heading into this season. And also, it looks like Dave Canales from the Panthers says Bryce Young's doing well. Says Bryce Young. I don't doubt he is. I don't doubt he is. But I'll let you know. We'll talk through it. I think the Panthers still stink.
How's the line doing?
I think the Panthers still stink, but are they going to be better? Is Bryce Young going to be better? I think is probably the main conversation to have there, considering he was the number one overall pick in last year's NFL draft. We'll hop into the Blitz around 6:30. In the Blitz, we have some J.J. Redick discussion. It sounds like the Lakers are doing their best. People in their front office are doing their best to put out some good PR on J.J. Redick. He has a comparison to a coaching great before he's ever coached a game at any level. Middle school, high school, college, NBA, he hadn't coached a damn game, yet he's getting comparisons to an all-time great NBA coach. We'll discuss that. And then also we have some Memphis football commits that I did not get to cover yesterday, but we will cover today. One, Houston Christian linebacker Rodney Dansby, and then former Germantown and Purdue defensive end DJ Allen came out of Germantown this past season and was an early enrollee at Purdue before coming back to the University of Memphis for his true freshman year. So really good pickup by Ryan Silverfield and that staff, but we continue to see that. I saw yesterday they are top 10 in transfer portal additions in the 2024 cycle. They're at 25, so they're at 9. Colorado's first with 40. But they are trying to turn over this roster and get ready for a season in which they're picked by a lot of people to be the Group of Five representative in the 12-team playoff. So we'll see how all that ages. As far as guests are concerned, we will have Jeff Calkins on again Tuesday, Thursday, and David Cobb's Monday, Wednesday, Friday. But Jeff Calkins will join at 5 o'clock from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show. And then at 6 o'clock, Christian Fowler from Bluff City Media and the On the Bluff podcast with me. He will join then, and we'll talk everything under the sun that has to do with the Tigers before moving on to a little bit of NBA discussion as well with the conference finals on the way. By the way, small talk today. Can I just, I'm gonna do a little bit of a tease. Are you a Raising Cane's fan? You ever had Raising Cane's?
I've had Raising Cane's. I wouldn't call myself a fan.
Okay. You saw the news. You saw the news.
I saw the news.
One coming to South Haven.
Yeah.
I'll break it down. All right. I grew up with Raising Cane's. I think there's a misnomer about Raising Cane's, the fast food chain that sells a bunch of chicken tenders. Now, Penny Hardaway was on the Point Forward podcast, which features Andre Iguodala and Evan Turner. And there was a lot to get to. There's a lot to get to on this front that we can break down. I want to start with what he had to say about Ashton Hardaway. Ashton Hardaway, his son, after 1 year at the University of Memphis, averaging 2.8 points per game, decent three-point shooter, 6'8", definitely a forward. He transfers out, ends up going to St. Mary's. Penny Hardaway, though, it doesn't seem like he's all that broken up about it, considering it's his son and he wants to see what's best for his son. But the way he explained it, I thought was pretty interesting. Go ahead and play that sound.
Three.
What's that type of conversation like when he's like, yo, Pops, I think I'm going to transfer out and head to St. Mary's? It takes one thing to be able to recognize that, but to be able to remove yourself and have that type of support system, what's that mindset like? Is it just one thing of like caring for the best situation for all your players? Or are you like, yo, I got a 24-year-old flamethrower that that might be shooting 45%. He might be giving me a contract extension, son. Like, you know what I mean? What's that conversation like?
No, I think
that's a real thing to go through.
Right. I think in today's world, you know, when Ashton went back to L.A., he and Bronny are really close friends. Bronny got in the portal and decided to, you know, to put his name in the NBA draft. And right after that, you know, Ashton spoke about wanting to do that because I don't think he was ever comfortable here because we kind of forced it. And I felt kind of guilty for that because it's probably not where he really wanted to come. I think he wanted to make me proud to come here. But I think St. Mary's is a wonderful choice for him because that's more his style, his flow, and what he wants to do. Even though I want him around me every day to just, you know, to pour into him. But in today's world, I mean, there's other coaches' sons around the country that I've seen that have transferred and gone other places. And you can't do anything but champion it and just applaud it and say, hey, I'm going to support you and whatever you do, and I'll be there whenever you need me. But he's trying to create his own path, and I definitely support that. But it is weird, you know, to have your son transfer, but at the end of the day, you know that in today's world, nothing is weird anymore. It's just how it is, and you just let them be free and not want to hold them back or hold them down from their dreams.
Yeah, and it's a supportive father. That's first and foremost. I applaud Penny for seeing this and saying, hey, maybe you don't fit the scheme as well as you should. You should probably try to find your own path. I know you tried to make me proud on the front end, but if it's not working out here and you don't find the playing time and the role that you need, go elsewhere. And I think that St. Mary's is a great place for him to land.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have the ability to spot up, be a spot-up shooter. You know, the defense, his defensive limitations aren't going to be as highlighted, I think, in the West Coast Conference as they are in the AAC and with this out-of-conference schedule that the Tigers are playing just about every year under Penny Hardaway. So there is that. But it really goes back to what we talked about. I think Penny sort of is confirming what we thought. He just didn't really fit the scheme. He's not an overly athletic guy by any stretch of the imagination. He's a spot-up three-point shooter. He's really good at that, and that's not necessarily what works in a Penny Hardaway system. You try to get up and down the floor. You try to run. You try to be super athletic. You try to be, you know, jump into passing lanes, get takeaways, turn defense into offense. And Ashton Hardaway never really fit that. And really, if you're reading through what Penny said, he basically said we kind of forced it. We were trying to fit a square peg into a round hole just because it's my son. And I think that there's a message to be gleaned or taken away from what Penny Hardaway said. If you look how he's recruiting this particular team going into next year, he's found more defensive ability. He's found more guys that can run up and down the floor. He's finding what really fits his scheme. And I think there's something to be said about moving away from your own son to go try and make that happen. Penny Hardaway and Ashton Hardaway, I both think, took away positives from this, and I think that this was the best thing that could have happened ultimately for both parties.
I thought it was a fantastic answer from Penny Hardaway because at the end of the day, he was right. He was, you know, his main job is to be a supportive father and try to help out Ashton and put him in a situation that's best for him. And I think that it's tough to admit that you have some guilt about last season because you did try to force it. It just, you know, when you talk about the uncomfortability of it, you know, it's got to be hard to look at your son and be like, hey, man, you're not going to be playing today. Like, even though we're struggling, Right. You're still not going to get any playing time. That's got to be tough. And I think it's best for Penny Hardaway and the Memphis Tigers. I think it's best for Ashton. He's a talented young player.
Sure.
That can find his way. He, you know, Penny talked about NBA draft with him. I don't think he's necessarily close to that,
yeah,
but he's got the tools to maybe one day be there, and he can go to St. Mary's and show what he's got.
Yeah.
Because he's going to have opportunity there. He's going to have opportunity to play games and to let that thing fly from three. So I thought it was a great answer for Penny Hardaway. I'm happy that there's no drama behind it. We never really suspected there being any drama. It really just seemed like a numbers issue. Hey, man, you're not going to fit into my scheme. I know that you're a knockdown three-point shooter on paper, but at the end of the day, the guys that he's bringing in, they're defense first. They can shoot.
They can shoot some of them, but ultimately everybody that's coming into the scheme has got to be able to run his offense, has got to be able to run his defense, and I'm just not sure if Ashton had the ability to do that. And that doesn't mean he's a bad player. It just means, hey, we got to find a different spot for you. So kudos to Penny and kudos to Ashton for making this decision, even though it wasn't hard.
I just
wasn't easy.
I think that the stylistic differences that Penny had with his son ultimately led to this, and it does show Penny's willing at this point after last year to move off of his own son
sure.
to go try to fit his own style and fit his own scheme, and I think that's telling in the end of the day. Hopefully that works out on the back end, and next year is a fruitful year. Hopefully next year is an NCAA tournament year. They can win the AAC, and the guys that he has targeted and has brought in and has signed can ultimately lead that to happening, can make that happen. Now, also, we went down the we're going down the list here. Jason Munns did a nice little write-up about this in the Commercial Appeal. You can go check that out at commercialappeal.com. But also, Evan Turner asked if the job is still fun right now under the new sort of regime in college athletics with NIL and transfer portal and all these moving parts. And Penny Hardaway said, man, I don't know about saying fun. Obviously happy the guys are getting their name, image, and likeness, you know, getting paid for that. But this thing has turned upside down, to be very honest. It's challenging, no lie. And then later he went on to talk about, I almost think he was talking directly about last year's group.
Had to.
When he said
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
But the later it gets, and you've got to have these guys, that number for NIL might jump up to $200,000 or $300,000. You start thinking, hey, man, you're not Evan Turner or Andre Iguodala. I don't know about that. To me, there was already an expectation. Now it's even higher expectation. When I start paying you that much money, you're making more than my assistant coaches. Now, I think there is a real thing to discuss about assistant coaches sometimes making less than the guys on the roster. I think that's a different power dynamic, and we continue to see that. It continues to show through. The power dynamic is shifting into the players' hands at least a little bit more, because now they have leverage to say, hey, you know, if you're not coaching me right, I don't like how you're coaching me too hard, I can get into the portal whenever the hell I please and go wherever the hell I want whenever I please. So It's this power struggle that you're dealing with now in college athletics. And Penny Hardaway, and I think the staff has struggled with that a tad bit. You bring guys on campus, ultimately they end up leaving. And he's had a lot of that happen with his high school recruiting classes, including his son that we just got done talking about. But I think he was almost directly talking about last year's group, bringing in Javon Quinterly late, bringing in a Jaquan Walton late. $200,000, $300,000 sounds like about on par with what they were probably getting from the NIL collective. And when you're doing that late, when you're up against the wall, they have more leverage. These players have more leverage to get all that money up out of you. And it feels like that's sort of what happened last year. You had a lot of guys that stayed in the portal for whatever reason. I think there was a reason they were still in the portal so late. And by the time you get around to it, you become desperate and you start throwing money at these guys. And I don't know if that's the way to go to be successful in this day and age, even with NIL at your disposal.
Yeah, I definitely think he was talking about last year's group, and you saw the lesson that he seemed to have learned from that experience, where he hit it pretty hard early this year. Like, they've already got a lot of the guys on paper. They're trying to get him on campus at a certain date so that they can have them all together, and they're not meeting each other at the airport on the way to tournaments this
right.
season. You know, it definitely seems like, from the answers that Penny Hardaway was giving during this interview, and it's a really good interview, I appreciated Penny's honesty
yeah.
during this
and
interview.
And he usually is. But
he's usually very honest. Yeah, I know. But, you know, you don't hear these types of answers from many coaches. Like, most coaches would be like, yeah, it's fine, I'm having a great time, da-da-da-da-da. Like, he was honest about it. It's the game of college athletics has evolved over the last few years. It is a different game than when Penny Hardaway took the Memphis job just a couple of seasons ago. It's a completely different sport with NIL and how it operates with the transfer portal. And I think, you know, he made a mistake last year and how they dealt with it. And so far this offseason, it appears that they have learned from those mistakes. We just got to see.
Yes.
You know, you have to have some reserved optimism about next season because of how it went down. But ultimately, I'm not surprised at all to hear him say this about last year's group, because that's definitely what happened. They probably got up against it and said, all right, we've got to get these guys.
We
got to
fill out the roster. We need a point guard. Who's the last? Oh, Javon Quinterly's out there. How much money
right.
is it going to take? We have $100,000. He's like, no, it's going to take $300,000. Then you start throwing that money because you become desperate late in the recruiting calendar.
It's another one of those answers, too, where we've talked about it a lot, but I do think there needs to be some sort of reeling back in with this NIL thing. It feels like the wild, wild west right now.
Sure.
I'm all for player empowerment, but it feels like they might have a little bit too much leverage and power right now over universities and schools. So
You know, because he was talking
They have more power than professionals in a lot of these situations.
Something needs to change, and I think that this answer from Penny indicates that that's probably how he feels, too.
And it leads me into the other discussion. He says he wants to be an NBA coach. That's not a surprise. I think some people in this market, you know, fans have taken it the wrong way. But we know that in 2021, he was reportedly interviewed by the Orlando Magic, where he used to play and where he was an all-star, where he was an all-NBA caliber player. And he was reportedly a serious candidate. But he went on to say, I actually have a dream. It's a dream of mine to coach on the NBA level. I think about it daily. He said he thinks about it daily, even though he's got this job here at Memphis. I know I'll have to pay my dues and come in at whatever level, which is fine. But my goal is to coach in the league one day. I don't know when. It could be 5 years from now, 10 years from now. It could be earlier than that, but I definitely want to do that. So as opposed to the thought process behind he's going to be a Memphis Tiger for life, at some point he wants to move to the NBA level. Now, I don't necessarily – I think he's just sort of speaking. Sometimes Penny has the tendency to do that when he says, I'll come in at whatever level and pay my dues. You didn't really pay your dues getting to the University of Memphis. You never were an assistant coach at the college level. You were just at Memphis East, winning state championships before you got this job. I know there was a calling from the local fans to get you in there. I don't think you'll have the same calling at the NBA level. I don't think that Penny Hardaway would be interested in leaving the University of Memphis to go be an assistant anywhere. I think he wants to build up a big enough resume to potentially be a head coach one day. And no one should blame him for that in the slightest. When we talk about coaching and playing, you want to play or coach at the highest possible level, right? You want to be at the peak of the profession in any industry. You out there right now, if you're a damn, I don't know, if you're a damn teacher, you want to become a professor. I mean, you want to be a professor at Harvard. You want to be at the highest level of your industry. There's no surprise that Penny Hardaway is not making ifs, ands, or buts about that. He's telling you up front that at some point, if the opportunity presented itself, I would love to be a head coach at the NBA level, and you can't blame him for that in the slightest. I do also think there is this outside thought that maybe his style of ball could fit into the NBA relatively well. He's taken a lot of lessons over his years in the NBA that he's sort of applying to this Memphis job at this current moment.
Yeah, I'm not shocked by this answer at all, and I also don't think it signals anything to worry about for Memphis fans. An answer that informs this answer during this interview, and we're going to talk about it here in a moment, but his knee surgery and how his career went in the back half of it, you have to wonder if he has an itch to be back in the NBA because there's some unresolved competitiveness that he misses about
right.
it, you know, some unresolved business that he wants to take care of. So it doesn't shock me at all to hear that Penny Hardaway wants to end up back in the NBA. I tend to agree with you. I think that the path that he would most likely go is try to build a resume within college basketball that's good enough to jump straight into a head coaching position. But if we looked up 10 years from now and he's an assistant on a team, I wouldn't be shocked either. It's his answers from this interview, each one informed another one for me.
Yes.
When he talked about NIL and how the college basketball game has changed, that probably has changed his thinking about how long he wants to stay in college basketball. If this thing doesn't stop being the Wild Wild West, it's got to be hard to do every single year. And if there's no more fun in it, and if it's just stress, I would understand why you might want to get out of college
go
athletics
deal with
and go to the NBA. Because you're dealing
go
with
deal
professionals.
Go deal with multi-year contracts.
Like, John Morant can't look at us and be like, I'm going to the transfer portal. Like,
no,
that's not going to happen.
Right.
There's contracts in the NBA and things like that. So I really do think that each of his answers within this interview informed others. And when I heard this, I was like, oh, I wonder if, he still has some unresolved competitiveness. He wants to get back in the NBA, scratch that itch because he got injured and his career got cut short. And then, the game is evolving so much and it is stressful. It is difficult. It's a year-round gig that you have to do. Recruiting never stops. So that can get tiring over time. So that makes me think, yeah, he probably wants to end up in the NBA one day. And we know a few years ago there was that flirtation with the Orlando Magic. And, maybe they come a-calling again one day.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that if he builds up this resume enough that he could be a solid NBA coach, but we're a long way off.
We're a long way from this.
We're a long way off of that. So we'll see what happens. But listen, in the end of the day, you want to coach at the top of the industry. You want to play. College players want to play in the NBA. They want to play in the NFL. You want to get to the peak of your industry. And for him to give that answer, you can take offense to it, the fact that he says he thinks about it every single day, even though he's coaching your hometown team. But that's he's telling you the absolute positive truth, and I don't mind that at all from Penny Hardaway. Now, on the microfracture front, I'm going to go ahead and play this sound because he's talked about this in the past. But with his knee and the injury he had to get a microfracture surgery. And for those that don't know what a microfracture surgery entails, they don't do it anymore on athletes for the most part. They sort of stopped doing it around 2016, 2017. I think Jadeveon Clowney is one of the last ones to ever have it, if that tells you anything. But I'll go through the names here relatively soon. But it's a supposedly minimally invasive procedure that repairs articular cartilage by creating small fractures in the bone. So they create small microfractures in the bone. Now, the holes that they create allow blood to form a clot, which over time, the thought would be you turn that cartilage, you turn that blood into cartilage, which fills the injured area. And it's supposed to strengthen your knee or your hip or wherever they're doing it at. But Penny Hardaway spoke on it, and he said it's one of the biggest mistakes of his entire career.
How was it for you when, you know, that knee injury, microfracture was new back then, for you to really have confidence in yourself every single day, the ups and downs of it? Some days you feel like yourself, some days you don't feel like yourself.
When I had the microfracture, I knew it was instantly the worst decision I had made in my life because I could just tell I was different. It was taking me so long after a game to get out of the car. I knew then that something wasn't right, and I was never the same after the microfracture surgery. And I was one of the first guys to have microfracture surgeries. And it felt like my left leg got weaker. My quad and my VMO on the strength work, it could never get strong enough. It just seemed like my left quad just stayed with it was very weak and atrophied the entire time and never got back as strong as the right. And I just knew I wasn't the same. But after the microfracture surgery, man, I knew at that point I was just trying to hold on to something that wasn't there, man. And mentally, it did mess with me. But at the same time, man, I feel like I was blessed. It'll definitely get you mentally, man, if you're not ready for it. And I've watched a lot of brothers just go through that, and I can definitely sympathize.
It sounds like hell, quite frankly. Sounds like hell on earth. And then you go through some of the names in the NBA in particular that had to go through a microfracture surgery. Chris Webber fell off the face of the earth. Tracy McGrady, once he got it late in his career, fell off the face of the earth. Greg Oden, before he got into the NBA. We thought Greg Oden is the number one pick. He was going to be phenomenal. He had the microfracture surgery. He never amounted to really anything in the NBA. How about this name, Chandler Parsons? As much as we hold contempt for him because of the money he seemingly stole, the four-year, $94 million contract from the Memphis Grizzlies, that microfracture surgery is something he had to battle with consistently, and he never got back to where he was supposed to be. And then I start to look even around, you know, football and the NFL. Think about these names. Jadeveon Clowney. Jadeveon Clowney, after he got it sort of at the end of his time or sort of in the middle of his time with the Texans, I think he's probably the best example of somebody that's actually lived through it at least a little bit. He had a 9.5 sack year last year, but he's never lived up to the billing of the number one pick that he was supposed to be coming out of South Carolina. Miles Jack, a guy I played against at UCLA, he was great his first few years with the Jaguars. But by the time he got to that second contract and he had that microfracture surgery, he was never the same. How about this name? Melvin Gordon. Same exact thing. I don't know why they perpetuated, why they allowed this surgery to persist, you know, late into the 2010s. Like 2016, 2017, you still had guys.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
As getting it, but every example you look at, these guys get it and then they fall off the face of the earth. Their career goes to relative non-existence.
Right.
And it's frustrating that, you know, Penny Hardaway at the peak of his powers was told that this was the right way to go, and he never was able to recover the same way.
It's a who's who of NBA and sports what ifs on that list. It is crazy when you read off that list and how many guys are on there that you ask yourself, what if they were able to stay healthy? What if they could get back to
Amari Stoudemire, I didn't even mention.
He's one of the biggest ones. I think you said Greg Oden, too. One of the biggest ones. Because when they actually played, they were dominant. But once they had those surgeries, they were just never, ever the same. And, you know, there's this funny trend going around TikTok right now and NBA Twitter about, you have no idea how good Tim Duncan was. It's an older player that's talking to a young podcaster that just says something ridiculous about Tim Duncan. I think he said, like, AD was better than Tim Duncan, which is just like, shut up and turn off your microphone. Tim Duncan, like, you have no idea how good Tim Duncan was. I really do think, like, in the city of Memphis, we know.
Yes.
But at large, Penny Hardaway,
yeah,
in his prime,
you don't know.
I'm not even sure
really
if he scratched the surface of his prime. He was unreal. You are still seeing highlights to this day of the few seasons that he had in the NBA and how dominant he was. He would have had a chance to be a top five player in this NBA. It was, I mean, I go back and I watch his highlights all the time. He's hitting moves that guys don't even think of doing today. God, he was
so
good.
It's like the point forward style of point guard.
He was one of the first, yeah.
Like, obviously,
he was like the second coming of Magic. But that's who he's compared to.
Right, but like still, like, I don't think people understand the trend that was being set by guys like Penny Hardaway back in the early 2000s. Right, like, it was just a completely different style of basketball player at that time that not a lot of people had seen. And, of course, it has to get cut short by this stupid microfracture surgery that has had a bunch of NFL players, NBA players, NHL players. It has led to careers being cut short.
I mean,
and it's kind of heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking when you hear Penny speak on it as much as he does.
In the 5 years.
Because there's regrets there.
Yes.
Like, what if I never would have got this? What if I would have gone a different route with this, you know, stayed out of trying to, you know, push myself back on the floor so quickly? Like, it could have gone so much differently for his career.
From 93 to 97, one of the best players in the NBA, four-time All-Star. He was an All-Star even in the season where he first got majorly injured. Third place voting in MVP one season. I think he has, like, two NBA first teams, second in Rookie of the Year. He would have been one of the all-time greats if he was able to stay healthy. It's an absolute shame what happened to him. And you know, that's why when people say, who are the biggest what-ifs in NBA history, it's Derrick Rose and then it's Penny Hardaway.
Yeah.
Those are the top two.
Yeah, and we've talked about that on multiple occasions. It's just, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
Unstoppable on 2K.
Yeah.
Unstoppable.
I hear that. I hear that. Now, let's go ahead and transition up out of here, grab a break. When we come back, I have some NBA news to talk about. We had the all-defensive teams published. Jaren Jackson Jr., not on it, obviously. He had one vote, but we'll talk about it. It's very center-heavy. And then we'll get into the Eastern Conference Finals, because game one of the Eastern Conference Finals with the Pacers visiting the Celtics is tonight. We'll come back with that right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Right.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Back into the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Today, the NBA published their all-defensive teams. And I think there's some interesting things to sort of break down. Now, for the Grizzlies' sake, I don't think you need to pay attention all that much. Nobody from the Grizzlies. And Jaren Jackson Jr., of course, won Defensive Player of the Year a year ago. He only got one vote for the second team. But there is an obvious reason he was not on it this season. I don't think there should be much of a surprise as to why he wasn't. I think ultimately it comes down to role because of all the injuries. He had to play a lot of ISO offensive basketball, and I think his scoring load had to go up, and that sort of hampered his defense. I think it's as simple as that, and I don't think there's that much to really pay attention to as far as Jaren not getting, quote-unquote, what Grizzlies fans thought he may deserve in the voting results.
Yeah, I don't think there's too much to read into it. I wouldn't be surprised if Jaren Jackson Jr.'s back on one of those teams next year with a healthy roster.
Yeah, I mean, I would count on it. I would count on
yep.
it. And I think also, you know, not having that big next to him the entire year, he needs to be a roamer on the defensive end so he can get those block numbers up. And he just was not able to – he didn't have that at all. He didn't have that at all this entire season. Now, the first team, I know it's positionless, but four centers on the first team. First team was as follows: Bam Adebayo, Anthony Davis, Rudy Gobert, Herbert Jones, Victor Wembanyama. Victor Wembanyama, I believe, becomes the first rookie to be, you know, top three in Defensive Player of the Year voting and get a nod to the first team all-defensive team. And we're talking about a guy who's only 20. But four centers. This shows me that there's a transition. And not even a transition. It's sort of always been this way. But Marcus Smart won, what, 3 years ago at this point, the Defensive Player of the Year. The stats are ultimately going to tell us who are going to be on these teams, who's going to win Defensive Player of the Year going forward, who has the most blocks, who has the most stocks, who has the most steals. Bam Adebayo, Anthony Davis, Rudy Gobert, Victor Wembanyama all up there in this conversation, so they all get nods of the first team. It is a center award. It's a big award. And if you get a bunch of blocks, you're going to be there.
And it also kind of signals, again, we've talked about it a few times, but how the bigs have made a return to the NBA. Like, there was a time there when you didn't want to have a big hulking guy in the paint. You had to have somebody that could be flexible that might be able to shoot a three. But if when you look at this list, you're like, no, this is some traditional bigs in
yes.
there. It's nice to see.
Yes. I think, you know, traditional bigs. Rudy Gobert is the most traditional, though, in the grand scheme of things, the way he plays defense. He's a strict rim protector. I think Victor Wembanyama, Anthony Davis, Bam Adebayo, all very good at switching and moving their feet around the perimeter, as opposed to Rudy Gobert, who ultimately won the Defensive Player of the Year. But he's the best defensive player on the best defensive team. Made a whole lot of sense there. Herb Jones, though, for him to get a nod.
Good for him.
Onto the first team. Good for him, man. Really good for him. And then the second team is strictly perimeter players. Derek White, who gets a lot of blocks for a perimeter player, but Derek White, Jalen Suggs, Jaden McDaniels, Drew Holiday, Alex Caruso. Any complaints there? I don't think I have.
No complaints there. If anything, yeah. I thought Alex Caruso might have been a first team. That's yeah. like the only thing is like I could see him being a first team, but no, I have no problem with it.
Yeah. Now I want to transition. We have the Eastern Conference Finals starting tonight. Pacers on the road against the Celtics for game
one. Can I say one more thing about all defensive stuff? Whoever keeps voting for Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox in Sacramento,
I don't really get it.
You need to have your vote taken away. It's biased. It's clear. I would be shocked if it wasn't somebody from Sacramento.
It's got to be
absolutely
a Kings
insane that you gave him a first team vote. Absolutely insane.
Even more so than De'Aaron
He's
Fox.
He's not
Sabonis,
a good defender.
Sabonis, I don't understand at all.
It doesn't make any
He's
sense.
He's good at everything else. He's not that great defensively.
No.
Defensively. He's just a very normal defender.
It's the same thing happened with the Defensive Player of the Year vote. What are we doing? Come on.
And I wonder if they just sort of award, you know, bigs with physicality and try to give them that vote.
He's great at throwing elbows. Doesn't make him an all-defensive player.
I don't know. Like his defensive ability, hate to be this guy, okay? I think his defensive ability is right there sort of with Yusuf Nurkic in that defensive realm. He's way better everywhere else. He's way better everywhere else than a guy like Yusuf Nurkic. But other bigs will absolutely abuse him, and he's not that great at pick-and-roll defense. He's not that great on the perimeter. I don't know why Domantas Sabonis keeps getting...
He
got a Defensive Player of the Year name, though.
That's what
it's
I mean.
Like
it's
got
to be the same person.
It's
absolutely ridiculous.
Now, on to the Eastern Conference Finals. We have the Pacers visiting the Celtics, game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. And we talked about how embarrassing it is for the Eastern Conference to consistently have sort of one team that you expect to be there, and then the other team in the Eastern Conference Finals. It's just like you had the Hawks in 2021. You had the zombie Heat a couple of years in between. Now you have the Pacers, who are the sixth seed, and no one expected them to be there. They're a fun team, I guess, relatively young. They get up and down the floor. They play an exciting style of offensive basketball, but no one expected them to be there. And I think they did get helped by a lot of injuries. We saw the Milwaukee Bucks with no Giannis and Dame for most of the series. And then, obviously, we saw the Knicks just down. Seemingly everybody. Julius Randle, Bojan Bogdanovic, Mitchell Robinson, OG Anunoby couldn't run up and down the floor in game seven.
Jalen Brunson broke his hand.
I think he got relatively lucky. But our good friend, Trevor Lane, who of course is from Lakers Nation, he's a host there and also a host of the Front Office Show, with our other good friend, Keith Smith, he put out an interesting question that I want to try to approach right now. He said, how many of these Western Conference teams would beat the Pacers in a seven-game series? And if you haven't checked the line tonight, I think most people, and we talked about the series line, the Celtics are minus 1,200 and the Pacers are plus 680. And then tonight's game, the line is minus 10 for the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals to win game one. Now, he said, how many of these West teams would beat the Pacers in a seven-game series? And he did the top 10 teams, the teams that either qualified for the playoffs or the play-in. And I guess I'll start at the very top. Thunder, no chance the Pacers would outlast them in a seven-game series. I think that would be a really short series, don't you think?
Yes. So
just say yes as I go along. Nuggets, no chance. Nuggets would hammer them in a seven-game series. Wolves would hammer them in a seven-game series. Now, I think we need to operate on the assumption that these teams would be without the players that they were without. So the injury news will continue to hold. Clippers, I think this is an interesting one with no Kawhi. I would still say Clippers outlast them in a seven-game series, but I think it would be a lot closer than you know, if they were at full strength.
The Pacers might get them.
Really?
Honestly, I don't know. The Clippers were just kind of bad. Like, they just weren't very good. They couldn't do much.
But you're talking about a not very good defensive team dealing with James Harden and Paul George and Norman Powell, guys off the bench.
Listen, man, I ain't worried about James Harden in the playoffs.
Okay.
That does not worry me.
Well, it would worry me depending on the matchup.
I think the Pacers could get him.
If I have Andrew Nimhard running out there trying to guard James Harden, I feel good about James Harden having a couple of spike games of those 40-point performances he's had in the playoffs in the past.
I don't know. I think I would lean Pacers in that one, but it would be close. It would go like six or seven.
Okay, so that's one that we'll put to the side.
I'd say how about a maybe? We'll make it a maybe.
We'll do a maybe.
Yeah.
Mavs. They're not beating the Mavs in a seven-game series. Suns, I don't think they're beating the Suns
I think KD and Booker could get them through.
I think that, you know, the pace and the lack of defense with those three guys, and we can leave out Bradley Beal because I don't think he's at that superstar level anymore. But 2.5 guys, I think Devin Booker and Kevin Durant would absolutely have their damn way with the Pacers defensively. I think they would absolutely run over them. I don't think it would be, you know, a sweep or a gentleman's sweep. I think it would be, you know, a six-game type series.
Yeah, I think six.
I think the Suns get over top. Lakers, I don't see them beating the Lakers in a seven.
I think the Lakers would win.
Pelicans without Zion, that's the one where I'm like, Pacers are winning.
Pacers might win in four.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind, because we've talked about it. Pelicans without Zion, probably the most unserious playoff team I've seen in my lifetime.
Yes.
Quite frankly.
Agreed.
And then the Kings, I think the Kings, that would be a fun matchup.
Really fun.
I mean, that would be 133 to 130 every single game.
I can't believe the Kings let that Pelicans team beat them.
Right.
Without Zion. That's crazy.
But I would say the Kings would get over top in a seven-game series. I'd put that maybe, but yeah. I'd lean Kings. Then the Warriors, I'd put that as a hardcore maybe. But of the teams that we think the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, appearance team in the Pacers, we think that there's, what, maybe three teams in the Western top 10 that they could potentially beat in a seven-game series?
Let's be completely honest about
it, Clippers with no Kawhi, Pelicans with no Zion, and Warriors at number 10, and they're sort of on the back half.
Right.
They're you know, turning into an extinct dynasty.
Yeah, so basically we had, what, six no's, three maybes, and one yes that they would win?
Yes.
But if we're being completely honest about it, these teams are healthy. I'm not sure they win any of the series.
Right. Right. If the Clippers have Kawhi, no chance.
Clippers have Kawhi, they win.
Pelicans with Zion still, I think, would
Zion
be an interesting
was so
one.
So good.
He
completely changes that team. Completely changes that team.
I get that, but at the same time, like,
Siakam
the Pelicans
does not want anything to do with Zion.
I know,
like,
but
no,
I don't know. But Pascal Siakam's not a bad defender, but he's a pretty good defender
yeah.
in the grand scheme of things. I don't know. I think that would be a maybe if you throw Zion back in there. But I think if you removed injuries, like, the only team we're looking at is really the Warriors as a maybe.
Right. I would say the Warriors and the Pelicans.
Our good friend Isaac Simpson threw in his thoughts. He said Suns, Pelicans, Kings, Warriors are the teams that he thinks the Pacers could go over top. I would disagree with the Suns.
I mean, the Suns, I could see it. I wouldn't be shocked by it. You know, it would just really depend on, can Miles Turner have a big series? Because Yusuf Nurkic's dumbass is defending him.
Yes. And, now, if we're breaking down, like, the Pacers as a team and what they accomplished this year, 47-35 was their final record. That would put them in the play-in in the West. They were a six seed.
Who would they have played?
So let's go ahead and check that out. They would have been right there, 47-35. They'd have been in the seven spot. They would have played the 7-8 game against the Lakers.
Oh man, they might not even make the playoffs.
So that's a, they're a protected seed in the East, but they would have been playing the Lakers in the West. And then you go, they would have been playing the 7-8 game, but it would be kind of interesting. I think it would be against the Pelicans. It would be against the Pelicans. I apologize. I'm looking at it differently.
I think
the Lakers ended up beating the Pelicans, getting into that seven spot. So it would be against the Pelicans 7-8 game. I think they'd beat the Pelicans with no Zion. But Zion was playing in that first game.
He got hurt in the game.
But if you break down even further what they did against the West this year, they were 15-15 against the West. And some of their losses were kind of unforgivable losses. They lost twice to the Portland Trail Blazers. They lost to the Grizzlies along the way.
Hell yeah.
They ended up losing to the Golden State Warriors in their one game that they played against them this year. They lost to the Spurs down the stretch of the season. They lost to the Pelicans down the stretch of the season on the road against the Pelicans. So if you just look at how they would match up against the Western Conference, it's bad. It's just they probably would not be able to compete if all these things were flipped over. But it just goes to show the Eastern Conference, man, it's got to be better, and it's miserable where they're at in this particular moment. You're letting these sort of up and coming teams get this hope that the front offices are going to latch onto. We saw it with the Hawks. We're probably going to see it with the Pacers. They latch onto this hope that, hey, anything can happen, anything can break our way. But the reality of it is, the Eastern Conference is just so bad that somebody's got to make it through against the Celtics this year, and it happened to be the Pacers.
Yeah, it's just, It's ugly. It's brutal when you actually look at it and break it down. The Pacers, they wouldn't have made it out of the first round if they were in the Western Conference. Certainly not past the second round.
Yeah.
It's just crazy that they're an Eastern Conference Finals team, and that is why I think it is fair to say, if Boston does not make it to the NBA Finals, it's one of the biggest choke jobs in NBA history.
Yes.
They have got to beat this team. That is not even close.
I would have to project a couple more injuries happening for the Pacers to even have a chance.
Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum have to go down.
Yes, I don't see any way that the Pacers can win a seven-game series. They may win one.
They
or
might
two,
win one
because the Celtics play dumb every once in a while, and they leave the door open for you.
but there's a reason that the Pacers are plus 700 to go win this series, and they're 10.5-point dogs tonight. And speaking of which, do you think that the Celtics will cover in game one at home
against
the Pacers?
Why are you asking me? They're 15-15. I don't know. That's not a
safe bet. Well, they're 15-15 in game twos.
That's in game two.
Game ones, they're okay.
We're safe with game one. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Ones are usually safe.
Dude, 10's a big number. A big number. I don't know. I think the Celtics are going to win, but if you took the Pacers, I think that'd be okay.
The problem is, it's almost how I viewed UConn during the NCAA tournament. Like, whatever style of ball you want to play with the Celtics, they can go ahead and play that style. Now, do they get 3-point happy? Yes, but they have everybody on the floor able to knock down a 3-pointer when asked to. You just have to ask if you're playing the Celtics for Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Derek White, and Drew Holiday all to have bad games from the floor.
They've done it twice.
But that's
in the
how you get
already.
Over top of them is by asking four of their five starters to be miserable from the field.
And shoot 50% from three yourself.
But you cannot assume that, and you can't ask for that every game. That's not how that works. And I don't think the Pacers have the defense at all to try to disrupt what they do from the 3-point line. I just don't see it at all.
No. Miles Turner has to have a big series too if they want to. If they have any chance, you got to have Miles Turner going nuts.
Yeah,
because he was an X factor against the Knicks. He had a couple big games. There were stretches, but he hit like three or four threes in a row, and you were like, "What in the hell is going on here?"
I think I trust for the most part, at least through the first couple of games in this series before they get KP back. I think I trust Al Horford to be able to deal with Miles Turner for the most
part. Yeah,
because he's decent on the perimeter, and Miles Turner likes to step out from there. Miles Turner can be tough in there, but I think that, you know, the rebounding is going to be relatively even between those two. I'm sorry. I can't see it for the Pacers.
I just don't see it.
I think one of the biggest things they're going to have to do is, one, play at their pace, get up and down the floor, make the Celtics try to get into their bench and play Peyton Pritchard and play, you know, all of these guys off of the bench. But because I think the Pacers may have a little bit of an advantage there, a tad bit. With the bench, Obi Toppin's been phenomenal throughout the playoffs. And Isaiah Jackson's pretty good. TJ McConnell.
TJ McConnell's been going crazy.
I think if you get the Celtics deep into their bench, you could maybe win some of those minutes when the starters are off the floor. But I don't see the Pacers being able to really disrupt them that much to where they have to rely on their bench so much.
I would say Celtics in five, at most six.
Yeah. I think
if it gets to seven, oh my
you
God.
You think it's over with?
If it gets to seven, man, that would be.
The Celtics.
I don't know if Joe Mazzulla is still there.
Fired before game seven. Celtics don't deserve nice things if they let this thing get
no,
to seven.
No, do not deserve nice things.
Yeah. Now, the NBA playoffs have tipped off, but it's not too late to get on the action with FanDuel, because right now new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. And I can tell you right now, the Celtics are a long favorite. So if you bet them tonight and they win, you can laugh to the bank. That's $150 to use on same-game parlays, live bets, championship futures, and so much more. There's no better place to bet all the playoff action than America's number one sportsbook. Just go to FanDuel.com/GabeK. That's G-A-B-E-K. Again, G-A-B-E-K to get started. FanDuel is an official sports betting partner of the NBA and 92.9 ESPN. You must be 21-plus and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire just 7 days after receipt. And if you have that gambling problem, do not hesitate to reach out to the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. We'll have all this and more on the other side as well with my good friend from the Daily Memphian and also from the Jeff Calkins Show. Jeff Calkins, he's next.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or make the Celtics try to get into their bench and play Peyton Pritchard and play, you know, all of these guys off of the bench. But because I think the Pacers may have a little bit of an advantage there, a tad bit with the bench. Obi Toppin's been phenomenal throughout the playoffs. And you're like Isaiah Jackson's pretty good. TJ McConnell's
been going crazy.
I think if you get the Celtics deep into their bench, you could maybe win some of those minutes when the starters are off the floor, but I don't see the Pacers being able to really disrupt them that much to where they have to rely on their bench so much.
I would say Celtics in five, at most six.
Yeah. I think.
If it gets to seven, oh, my
you
God.
You think it's over with?
If it gets to seven, man, that would be...
The Celtics.
I don't know if Joe Mazzulla is still there.
Fired before game seven. Celtics don't deserve nice things if they let this thing get
no,
to seven.
No, do not deserve nice things.
Yeah. Now, the NBA playoffs have tipped off, but it's not too late to get on the action with FanDuel because right now new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. And I can tell you right now, the Celtics are a long favorite. So if you bet them tonight and they win, you can laugh to the bank. That's $150 to use on same-game parlays, live bets, championship futures, and so much more. There's no better place to bet all the playoff action than America's number one sportsbook. Just go to FanDuel.com/GabeK. That's G-A-B-E-K. Again, G-A-B-E-K to get started. FanDuel is an official sports betting partner of the NBA and 92.9 ESPN. You must be 21-plus and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire just 7 days after receipt. And if you have that gambling problem, do not hesitate to reach out to the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. We'll have all this and more on the other side as well with my good friend from the Daily Memphian and also from the Jeff Calkins Show. Jeff Calkins, he's next.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.